Judges, in this class we try to cover five chapters each Sunday night. We're quickly running through the story. We learned Yiftach had won the war and he had made a vow that when he comes home, the first thing to greet him he would offer to Hashem. He's on his way home and much to his surprise, his only daughter comes out to greet her and he says, "Whoa, you've destroyed me! Here everything was successful, but you've destroyed everything." And he says, "I've taken a vow to Hashem, I can't go back." And his daughter said, "You've taken a vow, you'll do what you promised. Now look at all the good that Hashem has done, allowed you to defeat your enemies, the Ammonites." She says, "Do me a favor, give me 2 months, let me go to the mountains and weep over the fact that my virginity was, I've never lost my virginity, I've never been married, never had children." So he gives her 2 months. Our sages say the 2 months to go to the mountains. Mountains is a reference to the sages. She said, "Let me go to the sages, let me find someone who can annul the vow." So he took a vow. She starts arguing with her father. She says, "Yaakov Avinu said he will give a tithe of everything Hashem gives him to Hashem. Do you see he slaughtered any of his children? He had 12 children. Shouldn't he have given a tithe? One of the 12, right? One of the 10? And she makes many different arguments with her father, but she can get nowhere because her father is not learned. And our sages say when one is not learned and they try to be pious, they can end up making the biggest mistakes, as Yiftach is about to do. So at the end of those 2 months, she comes back home and he commits his vow. What does that mean? Two interpretations among our sages. One interpretation is that he actually killed her, slaughtered her in the name of heaven. The other interpretation is that he closed her up, like a hermit closed her up in a room where she would have to pray and always be a pious person in the name of God and never have any interaction with society. And that's how he committed his vow. Our sages say at that time there was a great sage named Pinchas who could have annulled his vow. And Pinchas said, "Fine, tell him to come here, I'll annul his vow." And Yiftach said, "I'm the chief general. I just conquered the Ammonites. I'm here with the Jewish people. Let Pinchas come to me." So each one stood their ground, and ultimately she paid the price. So our sages say that because of that, Hashem never again appeared to Pinchas. Even though Pinchas was a prophet, he lost his prophecy. Hashem would never again talk to him. And Yiftach paid the price that he died a gruesome death. He would lose limb by limb. Slowly, he died a slow, grueling death. Wherever he traveled, little by little, his limbs fell off until he died. So it says there was a custom that 4 days a year, girls would go and weep over the daughter of Yiftach. But in a nutshell, that's the end of our terrible story. And the message our sages took from it was that lo amaretz chasid. A person should know that you cannot grow in piety unless you learn. You could have the best intentions. Yiftach thought he was doing Hashem's will, and look at what he did. So the people of Ephraim, now, there was a territory in Ephraim that was just adjacent. Ephraim was inside the land of Israel. Let's look at a map quickly. Next week, God willing, we'll go back to our custom of developing our knowledge of the Jewish map, the map of Israel. But for today, let's just look at a simple map. If we're looking at the Jordan, so we know Yiftach comes from the eastern side of the Jordan, right? This area over here of Gilad on the eastern side of the Jordan. Notice that they're adjacent to the Ammonite kingdom over here. So it's very natural that they're going to be the ones fighting them. And right next to them on, if we go to the western side of the Jordan, you have Ephraim. Just north of the Benjamin region, you have the tribe of Ephraim. And it seems that the tribe of Ephraim would often cross the Jordan and graze their sheep there. As we find also in the book of Samuel, that when David's son, Avshalom, led a rebellion against King David, the major battle between King David and the forces of Avshalom was in the forest of Ephraim on the eastern side of the Jordan. Well, Ephraim has no territory on the eastern side of the Jordan. But because Ephraim would frequent, they lived right near the Jordan, they would cross over the Jordan and they'd have whole areas where they'd graze their sheep on the eastern side of the Jordan in Gilad territory. So it was even known as the forest of Ephraim. That's where the major battle transpired between King David's men and Avshalom and his men. So, over here we are on the eastern side of the Jordan. Yiftach is living over here. The tribe of Ephraim, if you recall, last time we had a great leader, Gideon, who led us to a great victory, the tribe of Ephraim came charging and said, "Why didn't you invite us to war?" And Gideon appeased them. He said, "You guys did more than I ever did. You guys are great." And with that, he concluded the fight. Now they're going to do the same thing. They charge Yiftach, and they say, "We're going to burn down your house on you." And Yiftach says, "Yeah, right." He gathers his men, and he leads them to war against the tribe of Ephraim. Now, it was very easy to gather the tribe of Menashe, his tribe over here, Reuven, and fight the tribe of Ephraim, because the people of Gilead were always mocked by Ephraim. When Ephraim's shepherds would come in here, the shepherds would always tell them, you guys, the highest man of you doesn't amount to the lowest of us. They'd always put down the people of Gilead, Yiftach's people. And so there was tremendous enmity brewing between the tribe of Menashe and the tribe of Ephraim, even though technically they were relatives. Ephraim and Menashe are both descendants from Yosef. So Yiftach and his men start a civil war, or you could say Ephraim started the civil war, and they kill 42,000 Jews. They kill all the people of Ephraim they could get their hands on the eastern side of the Jordan. And they captured the crossings of the Jordan. And any time someone from the tribe of Ephraim would try to cross over, so Yiftach and his men would tell him, Shibolet. Shibolet is a stream, a current in Hebrew. Shibolet is also a stalk of barley. But Shibolet is also a stream of water. So they tell him, tell us please about this stream of water. And Ephraim had a lisp. They couldn't say the word shin. They would say sin. So whenever they try to say Shibolet, it would come out Sibolet. And then the guards at the crossings would kill them. And they ended up killing 42,000 men. So that's the horrible end of Yiftach's reign. He was shofet for 6 years. And then he passed away. But because Yiftach wouldn't give in, and the tribe of Ephraim started fighting him, so he took the fight till the end, and that's the end. After Yiftach, we come into Ivtzan. Who is Ivtzan? Ivtzan is also known as Boaz. So here we have the whole story of Ruth. Quick overview of the story of Ruth. There was a famine in the land of Israel. People were unkind to one another. There was a man named Elimelech. He had a wife named Naomi. He had two children, Mahlon and Chilion. They were all men of importance from the tribe of Judea. They lived in Beit Lechem. And when famine struck, so Elimelech said, why should I lose all my money supporting the poor? I'm going out to Chutzarts. He went to Moabite territory, to the enemy. Okay, if here are the Ammonites, you go slightly south, and here are the Moabites. So they travel east, they go to Moabite territory. And what happens then is that Elimelech, who was so wealthy, and everyone looked to him to support them, Elimelech loses his wealth, and his two sons marry two Moabite princesses, Ruth and Orpah, and then Elimelech dies, and his two sons die, and they lose all their assets, and it is the Yom Tov of Pesach, and the wife, Naomi, who remains alone, has nothing to eat. She's ready to die of hunger. She's got nothing. She has no shoes for her feet. She didn't have the money to bury her own kids. Her two daughters-in-law buried them. And on Yom Tov itself, an angel comes and tells her there's food again in Israel. She walks on Yom Tov. She starts being mechalo Yom Tov. She has no choice. She's a pious woman. She has no choice. She comes back in rags. She's headed back to Israel. And her two daughters-in-law come along. Remember, they're princesses. And now they're down to poverty. So she says, go back. Go to your father's. What do you need to come with me for? So they say, no, we're with you till the end. They cry and they keep walking. And she says, go back, my girls. Why should you come with me? I can't have any more kids. Who's ever going to marry you? Go back. You guys can go back to your fathers, to your homes. And Orpah kisses her and leaves. And when Orpah kisses her and leaves, she spends that night sleeping with 100 different men and a dog. She becomes pregnant and she will mother many different children, one of which is the great Goliath. Goliath is the son of Orpah. What? I don't know.
Three different great people.
We will see the other great warriors that she mothered later on. She will be nicknamed Harafah, Orpah. And Ruth says, I'm with you. And she tries to convince her to go back, and she insists. She says, I'm with you. She says, you don't want to, you know, Judaism has the death penalty. She says, I'll die the way you die. I'll just pay attention to you. Judaism has all kinds of laws. You can't be alone with another man. She says, I'll sleep wherever you tell me it's okay to sleep. She says, I'm with you wherever. And when she sees she's insistent, she takes her with her. They come into Israel just as Ivtzan, our shofet, the leader of the Jewish people, Boaz, has just lost his wife. Now Boaz had 30 sons and 30 daughters, and all his children die in his lifetime. Poor Boaz buries all his children, and now he buries his wife. And all the Jewish people have come. It's a Chol HaMoed Pesach already by the time they enter Israel. And they come in and there are masses. They thought they'd slip into town. And they walk in and everyone's there for the funeral procession. And they walk into town and she's in rags. Now, Naomi was so wealthy that no one ever saw her. Anywhere she went, she'd always go in chariots. And people would only talk about the princess called Naomi. Now she comes back, her husband's dead, her two children are dead. When she left, she was pregnant. Now she's miscarried. She's got nothing but this daughter-in-law. They're both coming back in rags. And everyone looks at her and says, is that Naomi? We've heard about her, but can that be her? And she says, don't call me Naomi. Naomi means pleasant. I'm bitter. Look at what Hashem's done to me. Hashem has proven that obviously I'm not so pleasant in my behavior, because look at what Hashem's done to me. Obviously I don't deserve to be called a pleasant person. And she goes and finds some place to live, and then her daughter-in-law Ruth tells her, don't worry, Ma, I'm going to take care of you. And she goes out to collect among the poor. And she goes to Ivtzan, our judge. She goes to his fields. She doesn't know it, but Hashem leads her there. And she modestly collects, and he notices that there's a girl that's different than all the other girls. She's always modest. She only takes what the poor are entitled to. Remember, she was a princess growing up. And yet she doesn't want her mother-in-law to suffer, so she goes out to collect. And so Boaz takes her in and tells her, I'll take care of her. And then one night, her mother-in-law tells her, look, Boaz is really our relative. He's related to us. Go down. He's watching his grain at night. You slip next to him and ask him what to do. So she comes and he's lying there and he's sleeping. It's the middle of the night. She uncovers his feet and lies down next to him. He wakes up. He thinks it's a demon. He says, what's going on here? He says, shh. She tells him, hey, it's me. It's Ruth. You're supposed to marry me. I'm your blood relative. My husband was Machlon. And Boaz looks at her and he says, wow, you could have married any young man. What'd you wait for me for? Ah, I'm an old man, but you want to do what's right. Well, wait a second. I also want to do what's right. We're not supposed to be intimate tonight. And he sees that his desire is getting the better of him. So he takes a vow and he says, I promise, I'm not touching you tonight. You can spend the night here. I'm not going to ask you to go back in the dark. But I swear by Hashem, I'm not touching you tonight. Tomorrow morning I'm going to go. There's a relative who's closer than me and he's entitled to marry you first. We got to ask him. If he doesn't want to marry you, then I'll marry you. But don't worry, I'm taking care of it. He gets up early in the morning. He gives her a big gift, a lot of grain, and he walks her so that he walks from a distance to ensure she gets home safely. And then he checks out with the other relative who says, I'm not interested. She's a Moabite. Who knows what will happen to my family if I marry her? They'll say we have bad lineage. And Boaz marries her that day. He's very quick to do it. And he marries her that day, and they're intimate that night, and he does not wake up the next morning. Boaz passes away that morning. Had he waited one day, it wouldn't have happened. And from that comes the Davidic dynasty. All of David HaMelech's family comes from that one night. Boaz was quick to do his promise, to maintain his word. So that is Boaz Ivtzan. He never lives to see that he has a continuation. In his lifetime, he lost his wife, he lost all his children and all his daughters, all sons and daughters. He's judged for all 7 years. But in those 7 years, he turns Am Yisrael around. He brings an end to the famine. He causes tshuva, and he teaches Am Yisrael that you may marry a Moabite woman. Just because we're not allowed to marry the Moabite men doesn't mean we're not allowed to marry the women. And he fathers, what's the name of Boaz's son?
Peretz.
Oved. Who is the father of Yishai, who is the father of David. So he is the judge that we just finished, and that leads us to, we will, Bezrat Hashem, get to Samson next week.